Our friends are always happy when I interview Congressman John Buchanan from Alabama. I almost said a former Baptist preacher. He's still a Baptist minister. I understand that you fill quite a few pulpits now and then.
That's right, Doctor. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you. Now, you recently made a trip to Vietnam and Free China. I would like for you to tell our people about this World Freedom Day that you spoke at, and then you can follow in with your Vietnam situation. And may I take a moment to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with me.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Dr. Popoe, and it was a great privilege to represent the United States this year at Free China's World Freedom Day. I went to Taiwan as a guest of Free China to participate in what is each year really a week-long celebration, the climax of which is a rally attended, this year by 16,000 people there in Taipei.
Wonderful.
Commemorating January 23rd, 1954, on which day the Korean government released some 24,000 communist prisoners of war, 22,000 it was, and they gave them a choice. They had quite a battle with the North Koreans and the Red Chinese as to whether they could give the men this privilege, but they gave these communist soldiers the choice as to whether they went back home or somewhere else. The net result was that some 8,000 North Koreans elected to go to South Korea.
Good.
And some 14,000 Chinese from the mainland elected to go to Taiwan, to Free China, rather than to go home. Now, that's a significant decision for any man to make, but particularly, I think, for Chinese to choose not to go home to their families, but to go elsewhere rather than to go back under communist rule.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a case, it's not really widely recognized in this country, but 75 to 80% of the total communist prisoners of war elected when they were given the choice not to return to their homes under communism during that Korean conflict. So that every year, the Free Chinese have a great celebration in Taiwan, on Taiwan, commemorating January 23rd, 1954, which they insist proves, and I must agree with them, that wherever men have the choice, they choose freedom.
Wonderful.
And as you know, nobody in a communist country can vote in a free election. They never have, they never shall. There's not a single instance where a communist government has come into power as a result of the free self-determination of a people as a result of a free election, nor are there any cases where any free elections are held in communist countries.
Right.
But people do vote with their feet.
Yeah.
All over the world in fleeing from communist governments and trying to cross the Berlin Wall or the Iron Curtain or the Bamboo Curtain, and this still happens. People flee from the mainland to Taiwan and elsewhere and into Hong Kong, and people vote with their feet whenever they have the chance.
You know, since I was here last, I went to Berlin and was the guest of the West German government, having befriended Dr. Walter Bescher some years ago by getting some good conservative congressmen to go to West Germany to speak for their conservative party.
Yes.
He was a medical doctor then.
Yes.
And then when he got in power, he remembered, and he wrote me a letter in 67 and invited me over as the guest of the West German government. And I said that to say this: when I stood on the free side of the wall and looked over at those people, my heart was just broken. Then when I got over inside with a German agent, he was a double agent, to the communists, he was a communist, and I got a lot of pictures and talked to quite a few people.
Yes.
And 95 out of every 100, as you know, are killed in trying to escape.
Yes.
But they still try.
They
and that verifies what you said.
Exactly so. And this happens. I have stood before that wall and know what you mean, Doctor. Mm-hmm. And this This happens all over the world, wherever there is a communist government in power. And it's happened in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
People have voted with their feet there.
Yeah. Now, what? While you were the guest of Chiang Kai-shek, does he still hope to go back to the mainland?
Well, they still speak of it. And they do have a very fine army and military force. Indeed, this is one of the strongest forces in that part of the world. And they have great dedication to freedom and a great desire to ultimately help the people of the mainland to be free again.
Mm-hmm.
They, in speeches and in private conversation, often speak of their hopeful return to the mainland and restoration of free republican government on the mainland of China.
Are you in position to know, and I know that if you do, you'll tell me, did not our State Department just almost give China to the communist regime?
Well, I personally would certainly not consider that an unfair allegation. There's a good deal of historic evidence that had our policies been different,
mm-hmm.
China need never have fallen. And indeed, there's a good deal of evidence to indicate we simply cut the ground out from under Chiang Kai-shek and paved the way for the rise to power of the communists when it just was not really necessary at all.
One would think that our administration at that time must have lost their mind to do that. Now there are over 800 million people in China, and once they get the delivery power of the atom bomb, we're going to get it, I'm afraid.
Well, it is a very serious problem, and it, so far as I'm concerned, it underlines the... I think so far as the administration at that time, I think at least we must say that this was a great mistake for our country, and the administration at the very least received, in my judgment, some very, very poor advice from the State Department. As to the Chinese capability, I could not but share your concern. I think it underlines the rightness of an ABM system. Just as a necessary thing to protect our own second strike capability and protect us against such a country as China as well as against the Soviet potential.
Right. Isn't it comforting to have Secretary Laird in the Defense Department office instead of Robert Strange, emphasis on Strange, McNamara?
Yes, sir. I cannot tell you how much better I sleep at night since this is the case. I felt a little like the member of Congress, I think Dr. Abbott may have said this before, who, when they were discussing the war over in the Middle East, said that we ought to swap the Israelis' 400 F-111 aircraft for one one-eyed general. And another got up and said, yes, he'd agree to that, and he'd also throw in Mr. McNamara.
That's good. Now, back to your World Freedom Day. Were there a great many nations represented?
Yes, nations all over that part of the world, and a fine representation, and I think a very fine affair indeed. I think we ought to celebrate it in this country because it's significant.
Maybe I'll instigate
That's
layman's
a good idea.
Freedom Day. I bought time on five stations in the state of New York about 4 months ago, and I had a letter from a Pakistan couple trying to become naturalized citizens here, and they said that if all of America only knew the freedom, the blessings, open Bibles, open churches. And they said, we'd like to say free press, but it's not too free now, except for the liberals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from Taiwan, you went on over to Vietnam.
Yes, that's right.
Now, my daughter has a son, my grandson, David, 17 years old.
Yes.
The other day, she threw me completely on radio by asking me a question about David. Can I readily give him up for a war like Vietnam? And I didn't know what to say for a moment. I asked her, why did she say it? She said, well, I've talked with so many that have come back. The administration up to President Nixon, I don't know what he's going to do, tied one hand behind them.
Yes.
Congressman, can you answer that?
Well, Doctor, it's one of the hardest questions of our time and a very vital question to a great many American families. Mm-hmm. We have no more priceless asset than our young men.
And right.
There is nothing this nation can give that quite equals her young manhood, and consequently, aside from all the billions of dollars, and it is understandable and inevitable that patriotic Americans should ask this question when confronted with the risk of their own sons in this conflict. I can say, for my part, in the first place, that I have been throughout the Vietnamese conflict quite a hawk. I felt we could have done one of two things that would have been better than what we did do under the Johnson administration. We might have said, as the Russians did to the North Vietnamese, we'll supply money, materiel, we'll give arms and supplies, you find the troops elsewhere.
Yeah.
And not send our troops. This might not have been enough, but it's something we might have tried before we committed up to 500,000 men, American soldiers there. I think we might have looked for more help from Asia, for example. So far as manpower is concerned, I know you and I have discussed, and I have proposed before the Congress some time earlier that we ask Chiang Kai-shek to send 100, 150,000 men or more, and I think he could, to have those soldiers in place of some of our soldiers there.
Yeah.
But if we were going to commit American forces, as we may have had to do in order to keep the country from being overrun by the communists, then I feel we should have given our military officers over there a free hand, and our policies should not have been so timid and fearful and even vacillating, but we should have gone for a more all-out military victory, which this greatest, strongest nation in the world could surely have achieved even in a difficult little war, an ugly one like that in Vietnam. So I personally would have favored, if it did seem to be necessary, and I don't challenge the fact that it may well have been, to put our troops there if the country was going to be saved, that we should have given our military officers a free hand, and had we done so, I think it would have been over by now. Mm-hmm. There were those who feared what the Russians might do or what the Chinese might do. I personally feel the Russians will fight to the last Vietnamese. They're already supporting it to the tune of $1 billion a year.
Right.
The Chinese are torn by inward turmoil, the communist government there, and simply could not afford an adventure in Vietnam, and I doubt very much would support it even any more heavily than already is the case in Vietnam. So I personally would have gone the route of a more all-out military effort aimed at nothing short of victory in Vietnam, and I think it could have been achieved. I would like to say this, though. I personally believe that we had last year something close to at least a partial military victory within our grasp. Uh-huh. I believe that militarily we had broken the back of the Viet Cong in spite of limited policies. Mm-hmm. We have some very fine fighting men there, I guess as fine as we've ever put in the field, and in spite of all the difficulties and the limitations. The Tet Offensive last year, which many people looked upon as a victory for the communists, in Vietnam was recognized actually as a defeat for the Viet Cong. Mm-hmm. Because what happened was they surfaced a lot of their political infrastructure around the country. They made an all-out effort with their military forces, and it was defeated. And in the process, they lost many soldiers and much of their leadership, both military and political, and they lost any respect or favor they might have had with large elements of the population of South Vietnam because of the atrocities that were committed. The people fled in terror to the government in Saigon. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the Viet Cong was decimated militarily and politically. And at the time the bombing halt started in 1968, we were in a very, very strong position, and they were in a state of virtual collapse. Now, since that time, they've built up their forces, they've built up their supplies, they've brought in troops. Three-fourths of the forces we're fighting now are North Vietnamese, not Viet Cong of any kind, not only led from North Vietnam, but actually North Vietnamese troops. And virtually, it is a North Vietnamese versus a South Vietnamese, an American effort, clearly and purely now, with the Viet Cong having virtually as a military force been destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Politically, it has declined in whatever influence it might have had dramatically. The only place it remains as a force is at the conference table in Paris and in the psychology of a lot of American citizens and people in Europe who simply do not recognize that this is not some great, large, strong group of South Vietnamese citizens, but a militant and, I think, criminal minority led and inspired from North Vietnam and a thoroughly hardcore communist nucleus which is attempting to direct the overthrow of any government other than a communist government in the whole of Vietnam. Now, a significant change, too, has come in the government of Vietnam within the last 18 months. It has been played down by the press in our country, while the Viet Cong has been lionized. But the fact is that the people of Vietnam have accomplished a rather remarkable thing in the adoption of a constitution in the middle of a war, and setting up a tripartite system of government in which they have an elected executive, not the handful of generals and a military dictatorship that the liberal press would have one think, but an elected executive, elected by the people, who turned out much, much better than Americans usually do in an election here, mm-hmm. and turned out, in spite of Viet Cong threats, they would be murdered if they did so. An elected assembly, and I've met many members of that assembly from all over Vietnam. It's a House and Senate like our own, mm-hmm. and I have been delighted to find how many men of high caliber there were and what good cross-section of representation there was in the assembly. They have an elected assembly, and they have an independent judiciary that's acting like an independent judiciary. They also have a government which is beginning to show a maturity and a sense of responsibility toward the people that is unique, to my knowledge, in Vietnamese history. So what we have is in this little country of 17 million people fighting against a communist aggression which would by force impose itself upon them. You have, out of the midst of war and chaos, a free government to be created by the people, which is acting like a responsible government. It's in its infancy. It's not very strong yet, but it withstood the Tet Offensive in 68 and the other offensives the communists tried unsuccessfully to get off the ground, and it is much stronger today than it was a year ago, and it's gaining strength, I believe, month by month in Vietnam, so that both politically and militarily, I believe that the time will come when that government can stand on its own feet and step by step we can begin to replace our soldiers with their soldiers militarily, and they will gain control of their own situation. I don't know how long this is going to take, but I believe it can happen, and can happen even in spite of these limited war policies which have so greatly prejudiced our chances of winning the complete victory we should have won in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Long answer, but this is how
that's
I see
good.
It
I think that, I think a lot of mothers and dads and wives and sweethearts will breathe a sigh of relief over knowing that. Well, let's come now to this administration. Jokingly, I told the congressman that the natives were getting restless, and what I meant was that many of my listeners, and we now cover 47 states, are asking, when are we going to get going? And I asked one man the other day, what do you mean? He said, well, if I were president, I'd walk in the State Department and say, everybody out. I believe that's a little drastic. A lot of them ought to get out. But you remember this president inherited 35 years of socialism.
He did indeed, and a gigantic bureaucracy that is almost beyond human control. There's only so much under the law he can do toward replacing people. Now, one thing in mentioning the State Department, I might mention in passing, is that Otto Otepka, who had been done in by the State Department, was placed in a position of great responsibility at a higher salary than it had before, and with an opportunity to do some good work on subversion through the formerly defunct Subversive Activities Control Board, which is going to be reactivated and put to work fighting subversion in this country.
I saw the Washington Post write up about that. They said that he was in a place where he can't hurt anybody now. As if he hurt, he didn't hurt anybody but the communists. And I was much upset at the administration letting the State Department get by with that. Now, Rusk makes some very good talks, but why would he hold a man down with Otepka's ability?
Well, it to me is and has been understandable, except for the rather disturbing situation within the State Department of there being a great house cleaning job that is needed, and I certainly would be the first to agree that that is the case. And I've heard a man, well, Walter Judd, he certainly is not any kind of extremist or a man who would say anything that isn't the case, talk about how during World War II that people were brought into the State Department who were known communists and had not all been cleansed from the State Department when he last had worked on the situation and trying to bring about this cleansing. And some are still there. And we have some incompetents who are still there. So we do have some problems in the State Department without any question. I do think this is important about the State Department. In addition to the fact that we do mix in with the wrong kind of people, have some very good people in the State Department, and that gets overlooked. I'd like to say the other thing, that I don't believe I do violence to any confidence in saying that the president has said this in my presence, has made it clear that whatever may be the need for change in the State Department, and I'm sure he recognizes that a great deal of house cleaning could be done, the State Department proposes policy to the president. Mm-hmm. The president himself makes the policy. Mm-hmm. And this is an important distinction, because a president who is not knowledgeable about foreign affairs or who is weak or vacillating in his policies and convictions can be led down some primrose path by subversive or influences, elements, or by bureaucratic bungling fall into error, but by incompetence be led astray. But a president who is firm, determined, and knowledgeable in the last analysis makes his own policy. And he doesn't look just to the State Department for his information either. I've heard his closest associates say of him that he's one of the most thorough men they have ever met in trying to get all the facts and all the possible alternatives and all the arguments lined up for and against those alternatives, if possible, before he makes a decision, to try to make sure it is a wise decision when he makes it. And I think that he tends to follow a policy of looking before he leaps and then being pretty certain of what way he's leaping when he does so.
Uh-huh. You feel then that the nation is in better hands by far.
I do, and I think we need be careful lest we've had such a spate of legislation under Mr. Johnson, with a major proposal every few days, and went off in many directions at once, and we helped to add to the great bureaucracy and to its confusion and to its inefficiency, and we put a lot of bad legislation, in my judgment, through in the 89th Congress and to at least some extent in the 90th Congress, so that this great spate of legislation may have looked active and like we were energetically doing something, but in my judgment, we were often doing the wrong thing and not the right thing.
Agreed.
And I think looking before he leaps might be a wise policy for this president.
Agreed. Now, we're going to forget for a moment that you're a congressman, and we're going to talk to you as a minister. Do you see any hope for this country spiritually?
Yes, Doctor, I do, because I have great faith in the people of this country at the grassroots level. I know there's much that is wrong, but as the whole is equal to the sum of its parts, the nation is equal to the sum of its people. Mm-hmm. And this country was built on the shoulders of people of faith and of courage and of character and of patriotism. And in my travels, I've become convinced there are still enough such people in this country that we can meet the crises and challenges of our time. Now, we have to assert ourselves. Mm-hmm. We can't sit back and just let evil run rampant in the country and not make our voices heard or our influence felt, or our country will continue downhill until it's too late to do otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I believe there are enough people left who are a part of the strength and hope of this republic that it's going to meet the challenges of our time.